Hey there, opera fans. I'm Eric Teague. My pronouns are he, him, his, and I'm primarily a costume designer. You may have seen some of my work in different houses around the U.S., but, fun fact, I'm also a trans man. Ever wondered how alternative identities thrive in the opera world? As someone who makes art for his living, I wanted to explore that question the best way I knew how, by talking to some folks. On this show, I'll speak with other artists who exist under the rainbow umbrella, and talk about life, work, and what makes us shine the brightest. So now I'm wearing a new hat, as your host for Come As You Are, the podcast that goes beyond the curtain with our industry's amazing artists from the LGBTQ+ community and our allies. Think of this as a virtual coffee hour with some fascinating people whose work you've heard or seen in your favorite shows. Whether singers, directors, technicians, or designers, the thing that we share in common is that we all defy the gender expectations often associated with our industry. So grab yourself a cup and join us for a good story. Today on the program, we have with us a wildly talented artist. His work transcends multiple genres between opera, musical theater, and beyond. And you've likely seen his work with companies such as the Metropolitan Opera, Houston Grand Opera, Los Angeles Opera, Milan, Paris, and New York Fashion Weeks, the Shakespeare Theater, the Royal Opera of Versailles, the Washington National Opera, and the Glimmer Glass Festival, among many, many others. Welcome to the show, choreographer and director extraordinaire, Eric Sean Fogel. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much. I don't know who that person was. That's kind of there. A little embarrassing, but okay, great. Good for that person.
I know, right? Up top imposter syndrome, just feeling it right now.
Oh my gosh.
You're an accomplished dude. Like, and that's pared down, man. There's a lot of stuff in your resume.
Blushing on a podcast. Thank you. You know, no matter how much we do, we always want to keep doing more. And pandemic, that was one of the big things I came out of thinking, I just want to keep working. I just want to keep creating and keep doing things with my friends and the colleagues that I admire so much. So I'm not ready to tally off those credits yet, but thank you for that.
Absolutely. There's a lot of stuff to be proud of, for sure. And more stuff yet to come. I have all the faith in the world that that's true. But here at Come As You Are, up top, we like to introduce our identities and orientations. And for example, I'm your friendly neighborhood trans man, and my pronouns are he, him. How about you?
I am an openly gay man, and my I go by he, him, his. I have a little joke that probably isn't that funny. But being a Southerner,
yeah.
For the longest time, I identified as a Caucasian straight man. And I am neither. I am a gay man. I have been gay my whole life.
Yeah.
And I am half Persian, of an identity that I ignored for a very long time and still am trying to figure out what that means for me. But those Southern roots, I mean, you said you just spoke with Jamie Barton and
oh, yeah.
I'm in rehearsals with her now. And I was talking to her about her Georgia roots, your Georgia roots, and Southern roots are really hard in how they play a role in your identity of your sexuality, but in lots of different ways. But the one great thing is growing up in Charleston, South Carolina, the Southern roots never played a role in my artistry. Hmm. And I feel like an imposter, not only by the resume you read, but also that I'm here on this podcast because growing up in Charleston, South Carolina, I was so blessed that there were arts around me in every single capacity, and it was lauded. Like even in high school, we had a musical theater and show choir competition troupe that had the stars of the football and the soccer teams in it.
Wow. That's awesome.
Because it was such a popular thing to be in a 90s show choir troupe. Right?
Yeah, totally.
So, and because I could sing and dance, like I had a form of popularity because the show choir was popular. growing up as a Southerner, I learned a lot of things I had to unlearn.
Sure.
But I have to say, Charleston, South Carolina really supported me as an artist. Did not support me as a gay man. That wasn't until college. And I didn't come out to my parents proper until I was in my 30s.
Oh, wow. Wow. That was going to be my next question, because I too had a long time of struggling. Just, I was never struggling with myself. Like, my identity has always been set in stone. I felt like from the very first day I showed up, but telling other people and letting other people into my experience was something that I have wrestled with for a really long time. And I think Southern identity is a big part of that, because it does have some very gendered lines on expectations of people. And being outside of that expectation is kind of a very strange place to be sometimes.
Yeah, gender and racial. It's really fascinating, because I love to travel so much, and I live in New York City. Still, when I get home to Charleston, I catch myself uncomfortable when I'm in a room of 100% heteronormative Caucasians, because that is now not the norm for me.
Sure.
And it does bring back a lot of like, oh, do I need to act differently? Do I need to X, Y, and Z? But that and everywhere else is really completely gone. It's fascinating how once I hit college in the theater department, it was open arms for anything.
Yeah.
Anything. And from there on out, I felt completely free to fly. I saw one of your questions was, are there any stereotypes in particular for a choreographer? And yeah. I was just watching Bill Maher, and that was one of his opening line jokes about how China, you know, no longer allows Grindr or is trying to suppress homosexuals in China. And then the punchline was, who do you think choreographed the opening ceremonies of the Olympics? And I laughed, and I was also offended, because
right.
Because it is a trope and a type that I think I never felt I had to uphold, but it has been mentioned to me as I go along my career, like, oh, well, you're a perceived Caucasian gay man, the doors are open for you. So, and the only reason I jump that far is because it's interesting, as Southerners, we still don't think that.
Right.
Like for me, as a Southern gay man, I would never think any door was open.
Of course.
But in the theater, dance, opera, fashion industry, being a Caucasian gay man, you're on the express train.
Yeah. The world is your oyster.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, it's, I don't know. Your question just made me think about all of those things. Also so did COVID, right? Sitting in quarantine, sure. Watching everything happen, really, there was a lot of self-evaluation.
Well, being raised with those deeply Southern ideals that often undercut your own sense of self and sense of worth, did you have a hard time being an authority figure? Because as a director choreographer, you are creating the picture that the audience is going to see, and everybody needs to be on board with you.
Yeah, I always was the bossy kid on the playground. And you're laughing because you know that, right? Like,
yes, and I'm laughing with love. I'm laughing
yeah,
with
yeah, love. Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I was the bossy kid on the playground. I was the bossy kid when we pretended to play church. I was the bossy kid at church. So for me, jumping up in front of a room and leading a room, sometimes, as we say, strong and wrong, like you just dive in. I feel that's when I'm least self-conscious. Isn't that bizarre? Maybe because I had a performing career before then, that helped. But no. And I never think of myself by my heritage, my family background, mm-hmm. or my sexual orientation. I really feel fully the European artist fantasy, that I am just an artist.
Yeah.
And today, this is what I want to create. And I don't think about those things, but I am learning I need to be more aware of it, especially when it comes into play with other people in the room who may be more sensitive.
Sure. You're in a great place in your career in terms of having influence. So you're an example for younger artists, basically. Like it or not, there you are.
Well, the one thing which has nothing to do with sexual or racial or cultural identity is the way that I was taught as a dancer, or some choreographers that I worked with as a dancer. I vowed even back then, if I ever am running the room, I will not do X, Y, or Z.
Sure.
So that, but that's completely different. That's just regular dancer damage or young artist damage.
Sure. Sure. Well, we've all had some sort of issue like that in our training, because the arts are a very competitive, very, very difficult field to exist in. Right. I don't care what your discipline is. Your training is rigorous and it is difficult. I had a grad school professor that would say, if you're not training as though you were a med student ready to give neurosurgery, then you're not doing it right. So here's another project.
Which, if any grad students or undergrad students are listening, it is not that dissimilar to when you start juggling a freelance career.
True.
Just don't want to think of that yet.
Yeah. Well, in many ways, I'm thankful for having a difficult learning process as a student. But there are other things that it could have been done better, or could have been done with a more like humanistic mind. The separation between the artist and the human, one informs the other, but I think that they're both important to nurture in similar ways.
Did you feel supported in college in terms of being like in that safety bubble of creativity and being surrounded by artists?
I felt supported because I was talented. And I know my Southern identity just gave a hiccup there, because talking about yourself like that is wildly inappropriate. Mostly.
Right. Like your introduction, I was like, and sign off.
Right. Right. It makes you embarrassed to think about being talented or having kind of accolades. But I'm going to embrace that for this moment and say that I felt supported because I was talented and I had some really good people around me. But nobody understood the trans thing. Like, I can't tell you how many times.
Did you talk about it at the time?
I was pretty obvious about it, because I was going through my physical transition. Like 18 hit, I got out of the house and I got in therapy, you know?
Right.
Like I wanted to be in a form that felt right to me, to live out my youth the way that other people were living out their youths, you know?
Right.
But
And you know, it's fascinating, is for me, that was leaving Charleston.
Yeah.
Because it had all of the arts. I did everything growing up, show choir, church.
Right.
I was an organist. I danced. I, you know, everything. But I still didn't feel like I was my true self until I landed in New York.
Mm.
And then it clicked.
Yeah.
It just all made sense.
Lucia Lucas and I talked a little bit about this. About if I asked her if she had any advice for younger artists or people that were maybe questioning their identity a little bit. And she had a fabulous idea, which was get out of your comfort zone and move somewhere else that's just completely different from where you grew up, that doesn't have that, all of that baggage with it. So you get a clean slate. And I think that's true with most of us.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Well, you began work as like professional work as a dancer.
Yes.
And you've danced a bunch of amazing places, and you have dance credits like literally dripping off of your arm a mile long. But was it?
I still feel those credits every morning when I wake up.
Crack, pop. Well, could you talk a little bit about your journey from dancer to choreographer? Like, was it a lateral move? Was it a big jump? Like,
well, it happened way sooner than I anticipated. So the first several years of my dance career was mostly musical theater. You know, I did the normal route, cruise ship, theme park, right? Moved to New York, European tours of musicals, blah, right. blah, blah, blah. And then in my late 20s, it really started to click with dancing with classical companies, dancing at the Met, dancing on national tours. And the choreographers that I was meeting at the time, they started initially asking me, would you be interested in being a swing? Would you be interested in assisting on this project? And it really happened super naturally, way sooner than I ever anticipated. I still had in my mind that I was going to have this, you know, dance career, you know, into my 30s. And by 28, 29, I was assisting.
Yeah.
National tours and Broadway shows in my 30s. And then all of a sudden, the two people I assisted the most, Michelle Lynch and Peggy Hickey, started passing their referrals to me for jobs they couldn't take due to their schedules. And that's really how it happens. You put your time in assisting, and then all of a sudden you start getting the design jobs or the choreography jobs. Mm-hmm. But I was scared. I was petrified, actually. especially my first summer at Glimmer Glass in 2011. But I just jumped in, and the transition just really, it just happened. I mean, if the doors open, you walk through it, and yeah. It accelerated. It ended my dance career, my performing career, much faster than I ever thought it would happen. But it accelerated my choreographic career way quicker. And I think I only assisted for 5 years before I started. So I performed for about 10, assisted for about 5. And now it's been 12 years at Glimmer Glass and other companies,
yeah,
where the choreography career took off and now into some direction work. Also, praise be to Francesca Zambello.
Yeah.
Because she kept me in a company that facilitated my artistry, allowing me to explore different ways of storytelling and explore different ways of choreography with really just a green light. I mean, you've designed shows for her. You get the bullet point.
Yes.
And the direction it's going in, and she equally guides you while also allowing you free rein.
Yes.
And that's why I think her productions are so visceral, is because the creatives involved are allowed to be creative.
Most definitely.
And through that, this summer, I'm doing shows number 24 and 25 at Glimmer Glass.
Yeah, buddy.
And that has allowed me to figure out who I am, right? Figure out who I am as an artist. How do I want to see opera or musicals portrayed? The collaborators I'd like to work with. It was like a PhD in a way.
Yeah, it kind of is because... Yes, you were very young when you stepped up into these positions, but one would have never known it from the experience that you brought to the table and the very psychological and story-based ideas that you were bringing to the stage. It wasn't movement for movement's sake. It was movement for purpose and reason, and it created really great images that everyone could understand.
That's so kind.
That's true.
I mean, that is my goal. I'm one of the not to jump down your list of questions, but one of the questions you had mentioned you might ask is what type of artist would you describe yourself? But
yep.
I don't know if I could, except for what you just said. I want to try to tell the story in as many new creative ways as possible while knowing everything's been done before, right? Yeah, like,
of course,
everything's been done before. So I'm filtering it through my experience as an artist, as a human, what's happening in the world, who my collaborators are, and then who the artists are in front of you as well.
One of the beautiful things about working together on a team in a show is that in the best of all possible worlds, you have some time together in a room to really go through the libretto stem to stern and talk about ideas and do the napkin sketch of a concept for everybody.
You know, you can sketch so quickly. It's insane.
Thanks, buddy. I appreciate that. Now everybody's going to hold me to like the lightning sketches.
Really?
I tell you what, the sketches come quick when the idea comes quick. But if it's something that I need to noodle on a little bit longer, then it's going to take as long as it's going to take.
Yeah, it's so true.
Yeah. But you, working with you, even in those rooms, has been great because you're still thinking critically about how the story is going to get told. How do you find working with someone who's maybe not as in tune with their body and movement as you might be?
Well, there used to be a large phobia. So we want to talk about phobias.
Yeah, let's do it.
There was, I feel like opera singers, when I started in the opera industry, were so separate and segregated from movement and dance.
Yeah.
You know, and it's bizarre how it has come leaps and bounds in the past 10, 15 years. So many people in the industry started off doing musical theater, watching Glee, watching, you know, So You Think You Can Dance. And there's much more respect now, I think, for the art form going both ways. So at Glimmerglass, one of the not often talked about but most brilliant decisions Francesca made was creating this musical theater program. Every summer we have 4 to 8 musical theater artists who sing and dance in the operas to give us the higher caliber of dance, but they're singing along with the classical singers to give this unified theatricality. And I have more and more opera singers coming to me at the start of each summer knowing, and they say, I want to dance with the dancers. And there's been this cross education that's just it's just outstanding. It's just phenomenal.
Since you've been all over the world and done all types of different genre work, are there any productions or places where you particularly feel seen, like seen and supported?
I feel always seen and supported at Glimmerglass. I feel very seen and supported in the Florencia del Amazonas that we have. The choreography I did for that production may be one of my favorites. And sometimes you feel seen and supported just by in your work. Mm. Not you physically, but your work. And that's a phenomenal, phenomenal feeling. The other show I would mention would probably be the Candide.
That was a beautiful piece.
I tell my colleagues that's my number one on my list. And, that is maybe the show where I realized not only what I wanted to offer artistically, but what I wanted my work to say, really, you know, about humanity, because the piece allows you to do that. It's kind of, you know, Vixen allows that a little bit in a way too, where you have an opportunity to really put some love out there into the world. And, you know, a lot of operas were dying and we're like, it's tragic. And it's nice when you get to also work on the pieces that have that extra bonus of in where you can shoot some love out there through your point of view.
That's awesome.
Because it's rare. It's rare that you get the project that allows you to do that or the company that allows you to do that on the project.
Yes, that's very true. That's very true. As creatives, we're often beholden sometimes to someone else's approach to something.
Right.
And we sort of have to embroider on a already established thing. And the thing that was great about that Candide is the sense of humor and the sense of life changes on a dime and you just have to sort of go with it.
right, exactly.
Optimism, exactly. But it might not work out.
And honestly, it was my colleagues and my history with Glimmer Glass and the thought of these productions that I've done that got me through the quarantine. And when people were talking about, should I change professions? Oh, you know, we didn't know when theater was coming back. We didn't know X, Y, or Z. And I hit a moment about 2 months in and I'm like, wait, can I cuss on this?
Limited.
Okay. So I said, darn no, I am not changing my career. This is who I am. This is what I do. It will come back. But it was my colleagues and my collaborators that gave me the support system to get through it.
Well, where would you like to see the industry go? Like we've made so much progress over the years. And in terms of like incorporating movement into opera as an art form, where would you like it to go in terms of representation and inclusivity?
That's a really hard question for me to answer because I feel like representation and inclusivity, in particular for the LGBTQ community, is fairly represented at the moment, not only in commercial theater, but more than ever in non-for-profit theater. Of course, it can always be more. And right now there's a big push and actual action in making non-for-profit theater as well, more diverse. And that seems, to definitely be happening. I would say I'd be more interested in seeing diversity and people who run companies,
mm-hmm.
and even more in particular, diversity of people on the boards of companies. That is where it's non-existent at the moment for most major opera houses in the nation. Programming is getting drastically better. Yeah. Like someone flipped a switch. I'm not saying it's where it needs to be. I'm just saying there is at least an active awareness.
Yeah.
But recruiting people, I would say I wish there was more diversity in stage management. I wish there was more diversity in directing teams.
Mm-hmm.
I wish there was more exposure for trans artists in the opera world because that's fairly minimal at the moment.
Yeah.
And in all of those aspects, commercial theater is blowing us out of the water at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that non-for-profit will catch up. And then I'm just going to sound like 10 years behind the curve on this one. But I would love to see dance used more theatrically as a form of storytelling in opera. But I will probably say that in my 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s. Because I am like the one of three people who care about that, right? I just, you know, it was, we have the most collaborative art form of all the industries, using every single discipline simultaneously. And I would just, I hope I can continue to be an advocate for dance in classical music and movement, because it's not about dance, kickball change, pas de bourrée, step, point your toe, right? It's about using movement and using the human body to further storytelling.
Right on, buddy. That's great.
That was a quote.
That's a good one. That's a good soundbite. Well, okay. Thank you so, so, so much for sitting down with me today. It's been a great conversation. Always a joy.
It just feels like one of our normal dinner conversations.
That's kind of the lovely thing about what I wanted this podcast to be. It's called Come As You Are because, you know, I want it to be chill.
Well, my puppy has now fallen asleep now that the interview is over. So
perfect. Soothed by our deep philosophical conversation. Well, again, thank you so much for being here today. And for our listeners, if you'd like to keep up with Eric Sean Fogel, you're going to need a good workout regimen and tons of discipline, but you can sure check out his work at his website, ericseanfogel.com. You can also see pictures from some of the work we referenced together at my site, ericteaguedesign.com, and Opergeist on Etsy and Instagram. A huge thanks goes out to the team at the Atlanta Opera for making this podcast possible. And as always, y'all means all. So come as you are, and your spotlight is waiting. Bye, y'all.